you know, I live in a place where there are fewer opportunities to vote. Polls are closing earlier. There aren't the same number of voting places that there were even when I moved here. And it's clearly on purpose. You know, you have to have your ID. Like, there's so much that's done to keep people from voting. You can't hand out water while you're in line. You know,
like, tell me that how fraudulent that is, handing out water.
Yeah. And I do wish, I think about this a lot. And Evie, I want to hear a poem. I should ask you to read. We're just talking, and I really want you to read a poem for us. But I do, you know, and I think you said you had a poem that was about voting or about politics, and it would be great to hear it maybe now. But I do think it's quite interesting that judges have made it completely okay to harass people at the polls. Federal judges are saying that's all right now. You know what I mean? But you can't give somebody water. And I wish, you know, there's this thing in me that always wants to believe that doctors, that politicians, that teachers, that people who do the jobs that they do, originally at least, sought after those jobs because they wanted to do something right, because they wanted to help somebody. And I less and less believe that the older I get. It seems to me that if politicians really wanted to help people, we could at base believe that as many people voting as possible is what's best, that we actually figure out what's going on with the nation and what the nation's needs are if everybody has the opportunity to vote. And yet it seems to me that in actuality, we end up with political parties who are open about the fact that they don't want everybody to vote, who say they don't want everybody to vote. It's really sad.
I mean, this conversation sets up this poem really well. It's not about the moment, the time period or the place of Dickinson, but it is about the degree to which voting rights have been gained very incrementally in this country, even as they are now being eroded incrementally in this country. And this is a poem that I wrote for the 100th anniversary of the amendment to the Constitution that gave women the right to vote, which had its centenary in 2020. And what I found myself thinking about was, okay, so that's when women got the right to vote, but not all women then were able to exercise that right. And so, I'll just read the poem. Women's voting rights at 100, but who's counting? Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a voter by her toe. If she hollers, then you know, got yourself a real Jane Crow. One vote is an opinion with a quiet legal force, a barely audible beep in the local traffic, and just a flashless drop of mercury in the national thermometer. Mm. But a collectivity of votes, a flock of votes, a pride of votes, a murder of votes can really make some noise. One vote begets another if you make a habit of it. My mother started taking me to the polls with her when I was 7, small, thrilled to step into the booth, pull the drab curtain hush shut behind us, and flip the levers by each name she pointed to, the X's clicking into view. There, she called the shots. Mm. Rich gal, poor gal, hired girl, thief, teacher, journalist, vote your grief. One vote's as good as another. Still in 1913, Illinois' gentle suffragists, hearing Southern women would resent spotting Mrs. Ida B. Wells Barnett amidst white marchers, gently kicked their sister to the curb. But when the march kicked off, Ida got right into formation as planned. The Tribune's photo showed her present and accounted for. One vote can be hard to keep an eye on, but several, a colony of votes, can't scuttle away so unnoticed so easily. My mother, veteran registrar for our majority Black election district, once found, after much searching, two bags of ballots, a litter of votes, stuffed in a janitorial closet. One Mississippi, two Mississippis. One vote was all Fannie Lou Hamer wanted. In 1962, when her constitutional right was over 40 years old, she tried to register. All she got for her trouble was literacy tested, poll taxed, fired, evicted, and shot at. A year of grassroots activism nearly planted her Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party in the National Convention. One vote per eligible voter was all Stacey Abrams needed. She nearly won the Georgia governor's race in 2018, lost by 50,000, an unkindness of votes to the man whose job was purge up, maintaining the voting rolls. Days later, she rolled out plans for getting voters a fair fight. It's been 2 years, or actually now 4 years, and counting.
Very good. Thank you so much for that. Wow.
You're welcome.
I love that.
I really, really understand and sympathize with and acknowledge all the problems with voting. It is reformist at best. You know, as long as we've got a two-party system, if nothing is going to change in any dramatic way, because both parties are centered to right and bound up with corporate money. But and here's why I like to repeat Angela Davis, or at least paraphrase her. Like, you vote in order to create marginally better conditions for doing the work that you have to do. To change the system entirely. I mean, who's that going to be easier under? Right? What, how much more difficult do we need it to be for ourselves? You can't not vote and not do anything else is basically another way of going at that. You vote and then you work.